Hello there and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. It's hard to categorise my next guest. He was a reality TV contestant on The Biggest Loser. He worked as a bouncer at Melbourne nightclubs and pubs in the thriving pub rock scene of the late 70s and 80s when bands like Midnight Oil, The Angels, Noiseworks and The Uncanny X-Men were all making a name for themselves. He tells me as a bouncer he was shot at and stabbed. He's worked in retail, and these days he owns and runs his own gym. John Morrell is passionate about business and passionate about passing on what he knows and understands about the game. I sincerely hope you enjoy this podcast.
I'll try anything. I just do anything. I don't believe in the word can't. You just, if you think you can do it, then you just do it. So,
well, in the brief time that I've known you, I've known you as a successful local businessman. Do you like reality TV star or TV?
Yeah, I don't know where you fit it.
Does that sit uncomfortable?
Just an overweight bloke person that went on TV, that's probably where I need to be at.
Let's talk about that. What made you decide to do that?
Oh, I guess it was a long history of being in retail and burning the candle at each end, and I slowly blew out of proportion and ended up becoming 150 kilos. I had sleep apnea. I was on antidepressants. I smoked 30 plus cigarettes a day. And I hit the wall. So after being in retail for many, many years, I just figured that this is not good. It was a time for change. And I didn't put any weight on because, I mean, obviously I loved to eat, but I also loved to drink. And it all just got to me and it was time to change. And retail's a really tough gig and I'd been doing it for a long time. In the music industry, I was in retail. And then in the electrical industry, I was in retail and I loved it. Best time of my life. But then it was time for change. So I had to change. And I thought it was probably more the fact that the lifestyle that I had traveling overseas and back in the music, just hanging out with musos. And I mean, you'd be very aware of what that lifestyle was like. So I decided to get out of retail and change. And then I ended up getting a job as an advertising manager for Sunshine Coast Daily. But it was the same thing. The only difference was instead of working 100 hours a week, I was working 40 hours a week, but I was still going on long lunches and various functions and drinking. And then one day I was in my office and I saw an ad came up on screens, contestants wanted for The Biggest Loser. And I sort of did a quick shuffle and looked over my shoulder and went and closed my office door. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have a go at this. So I've typed everything in and entered it.
But what made you want to have a go at that? I mean, people want to lose weight and work out, but why on TV?
Well, because I think the thing that got me was I definitely wanted to lose weight. And I know what I'm like and how I focus. So I needed to just go somewhere and get away from everything. Get away from reality, basically, is the way I looked at it.
Right.
And then just focus. And just focus on what I needed to do. And I thought, well, I've heard that you end up sort of like in a jail and that's what happens. So that's the reason why I wanted to go on it. It was purely that focus. And then after running out and getting my photographer that needed to take a photo of me there and then, and everyone's sort of questioning, I had to keep it undercover and I never thought anything would come of it. So then I think it was a week later, I got an email back to say, well, we want to shortlist you and we want you to come for a casting meeting. I hadn't told anybody, hadn't told my family, hadn't told my children, my wife. So we're sitting, it was Father's Day, 2007, September Father's Day. And I told them there, I said, guess what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm going for this casting meeting on The Biggest Loser.
Do you remember what they said?
Oh, my God. My kids went crazy. They've gone, you kidding.
Good or bad?
Oh, they were so happy. They were so happy. My ex-wife's jaw hit the floor and said, you've got to be kidding. So, well, she was my wife at that time, now ex, but that's another story in itself. So I'm going through these questions and the kids are going, well, you know what it's about. I said, yeah, you're going to lose weight. And then a question, I've got no answers. And my daughter said, well, you know, you can actually win $250,000 on this show. So I just said, look, it's not about that. I wanted to go on this and I wanted to focus. And then 2 weeks after that, I got an invite and got accepted. The casting meeting was quite interesting.
Yeah.
You had to go through a couple of little meetings with producers and directors and psychologists. And as soon as they mentioned psychologists, I thought, well, I was going to fail that one pretty quickly, but I did get through.
For people that aren't familiar with the show, how long ago and what was the end result?
The end result was, so it was almost just over 10 years ago now. End result, I ended up losing 50 kilos.
Right.
End result is today I own my own gym with my own team of trainers and been in the fitness industry for 10 years now. I'm loving it.
Let's rewind. Where did you grow up, John?
I grew up in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Grew up in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, around the, you know, Broadmeadows, Coburg, Pascavale area. Yeah, it was pretty tough, but it was fun. You know, I always enjoyed my life down there. Got very much involved in music when I was young. Music's my passion and still is today. My father used to manage bands back then, and I was 14 years old working on his road crews and, you know, doing his lights and just helping set up.
Anyone's we know?
He had his finger in the pie of Uncanny X-Men.
Is that right?
Although Brian had Maddox. Another name back then.
Yeah.
So that was about it then. And then I started getting into managing bands when I was about 18 years old. And then I got into the hospitality industry as I became a bouncer. And then from there, I moved into training manager and then started managing the long and short of that industry. Ended up managing some nightclubs down in Melbourne, one in particular, which was called the Excelsior Hotel. And we went through a stage there for 2 years where we had every major Australian artist playing there. We had the Angels play there. And you know that song, No Way, Da Da Da?
Yeah, well, I think it's Am I Ever Going to See Your Face Again?
That's the one, yes.
I think the one you're talking is the alternative.
I do apologize. Well, I remember that was done there. That was the first time they came up with that.
That kind of question and answer with the response with the crowd. And
that was in Thomastown. Right. And their support was Noiseworks.
Wow.
And Noiseworks had only just bought out their first single, No Lies.
Okay, so give me a sense, 80, 81, is that what we're talking about?
You know, the problem with over the years, I've just lost dates and times, and I just remember those moments. It was just extraordinary.
That must have been amazing times.
Oh, it was brilliant. We had Midnight Oil 3 Fridays in a row.
Wow.
We had Dragon. We had Uncanny X-Men. Oh, it was just, John Farnham, he opened up his Whispering Jack tour there.
Wow.
Which was, he's always been my hero. My mother took me to his wedding and because I just love John Farnham. And
hang on, just rewind again, John. Your mum took you to Farnsey's wedding.
Yes.
How did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, I used to listen to One is the Loneliest Number, the song that
that's from the late 60s. Late 60s, sure, yeah.
And I loved it and I would play it all the time. And he got married in Glenroy. And Glenroy was in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. So we went and stood out because I wanted to see it. So we stood out there and watched the wedding.
But you were an invited guest.
No. We were uninvited guests, actually.
But sure. So you went along and checked out when Farnsey tied the knot.
Yes.
Wow. Do you remember any other, anything that stands in your memory because, you know, there's so many stories about those bands when they toured. I mean, who was the lead singer of Dragon? Mark Hunter. I mean, he got into a fair bit of trouble touring the States. He was quite, you know, aggressive on stage. Can you remember anything about any of those bands, whether it was the Oils, the Angels?
I do remember one, and it was Kevin Borich. So he played the Party Boys was a band that
I know.
Have odd members. Yes. They had Status Quo member in there. Yeah,
James Rain,
Angus, Angry Anderson, and they'd mix and
Swanee,
match.
Jimmy Barnes's brother.
Correct.
He was
John
in there.
Swan, yeah. Yes, correct. Kevin Borich played there one day, and he was a bad boy. He used to drink a lot, and a lot of us did back then, and he just lost control, and I could hear this. I'm sitting in my office, and I could hear this smashing of lockers and doors. I'm going, oh, no, here we go. So I've walked down, and here he is on the floor, halfway in a bit of a fight with somebody. So I've walked into the room, and he's taken one look at me. I'd never met him in my life. He's taken one look at me. It was my best mate. He just totally calmed down and stopped any anger and calmed down at that moment and then stopped. A little bit later on, they did the gig. Then at the end of the gig, I'm sitting in the office, you know, sorting out all the money and stuff like that. And then the next minute, I'm hearing yelling. Sure enough, he's now out in the street. He's half bitten off one of the road crews here. So the same thing, I've walked up and he's just totally stopped. So I don't know why that stuck in my head, but it was probably more the fact that I've never met this guy. And it just calmed him down straight away. So that was quite interesting. I suppose the one of the biggest memories was our opening night. It was when we had the Angels. And of course, we did the contract for Noiseworks. And we paid $250. But we signed that months and months ago before they released No Lies, which went to number one. And that was that just put them on the map big time in Australia. So anyway, we ended up, it was our first night. We didn't know how many people we could fit into this place. And we sold in 2,145 tickets. And it was a nightmare. The bar was 8 deep. We just could not handle it, could not control the crowd.
This is the Excelsior Hotel.
Excelsior Hotel in Thomastown.
Yeah, right.
So to give you an indication of the size of this place, the public bar had about 16 pool tables in there.
And you sold over 2,000 tickets.
Over 2,000 tickets.
Right.
And it was crazy. So then the following gig, we had John Farnham do his Whispering Jack tour, and we sold in 1,600. So that then gave us where we should fit. But that opening night was a nightmare, but a night to remember. Because it was extraordinary.
Man, they're great memories. I love music as well, but I miss the... And I didn't grow up in a place like Melbourne where I could see these kind of acts down at the corner pub. I grew up in country Queensland. But you hear a lot of people lament the days of that 80s pub rock scene that no longer exists.
No. So the music, live music like that's just not around anymore.
No.
It's slowly coming back, I think.
But not to that extent, John, you know, where you could go to the corner pub, like your pub back then, and see Noiseworks, The Angels, Uncanny X-Men, The Oils. That doesn't happen anymore.
And before that, we used to go and watch AC/DC down at Bombay Rock.
Oh, no, that's a classic story. I think a lot of people, a few people tell you the story that they had AC/DC at the school social.
Yeah.
You know, back on the Gold Coast, back in the very early 70s. Yeah. But do you miss... I mean, I don't know if you still have an urge or a desire to go out and see live music these days. Do you?
I can't get it out of my blood.
No.
I love it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I'm going on the 15th of June. Dan Sultan's in town.
Yeah, right.
And he's sensational. I love music. It's something you just can't get out of your system, because that all evolved for me into... So in the hospitality industry, it was pretty tough, particularly some of the pubs that I was in at. And the last one I had was the West Brunswick Hotel. And it was a tough pub. It was a really, really tough pub. Anyway, I had a knife held to my throat, and that was the day I decided to get out of the industry, because I'd already been shot at before. I'd been stabbed, and
don't gloss over that story.
That's just part of what's happened in hospital.
Just kind of, well, I got shot and I got stabbed.
No, I didn't get shot. I got shot at. I hit the deck, but I did get stabbed, and I still have those scars bearing that. But that's okay. That's the nature of the business back then. So when this last part, I had this knife held to my throat. That was it. It just a switch. And I guess if you talk about one word, reinvention is my one word, because I keep reinventing what I'm doing in my life. So my kids, my wife and daughter were upstairs because we were living in the hotel. And I walked up there and said, we're out. We're done. We're done.
It's over.
The car. We're out of there. And then, you know, I was a little bit lost. But I saw an advert it was a company by the name of Brashers. Now, Brashers were the biggest electrical music retailer in Australia back then. And there was an ad for either management experience or sales experience, and I'd never sold anything in my life. And I thought, oh, this is my opportunity. I want to get into music. I can play the drums, I can sing, but I'm not the greatest in the world. So I couldn't make a career out of actually doing it. Well, maybe I could. I just didn't back myself. But I thought, well, I want to get into the CDs and the music shops and stuff like that. We had cassettes too back then.
Oh, I know what they are.
I'm looking across the room at you and I can see we're the same vintage, but that's all right.
You looked at me like, you know what they are? Those
cassettes. Yeah, I know what they are. I was thinking 8-track stereo then, but...
them I didn't use.
No.
But cassettes, I understand.
I'd seen them in Dad's car.
But this word reinvention, do you find it easy to do that? Like you see, and obviously you're very successful, whatever you apply your mind to, John, but... when you have that, whatever happens, that catalyst for you to go, okay, I've done that. I'm going to move on from that now. I'm going to do this. Is that an easy step or a process for you then to kind of make a complete 180 and go, I'm going to be focused on this now?
I'm very much a person that when it's done, it's done. You got to move on. You can't go forward if you keep looking back. You've just got to go and do it. So is it easy? No, it's not. No, change and transition is huge for anybody. I believe most human beings don't like change. But if you're not receptive to it and you don't go forward with it, you just sit there, you lie dormant. And a lot of things always have to go with that change that could be changing. I mean, that transition back then was a perfect example. I went in for the job interview and So if you can imagine this guy that's in hotels, ex-bouncer, running nightclubs, I had long hair, I had a ponytail, I had two earrings, I had this big goatee beard, and I rode a chopper motorcycle. That was my form of transport. And I've rocked up to a company like by Brash's, and it's very, you know, you've got to have a suit and tie, and it's a very professional outfit if you want to get into management. So I've gone for the job interview, and not only did I add to all that character, I decided to wear a black shirt. Not a nice white business, a black shirt. So I've walked in, and I remember one guy, he was a regional manager. I had an interview with two regional managers, and one looked at me and looked at me up and down. And you could just see it was a no-go. So then the following day, I got a phone call from the other regional manager, and he said to me, listen, there's something, I saw something in your character. I want to give you a shot. But it wasn't in the music part, it was just in the electrical. He said, but I want you to prove to me that you can sell. And I'm going to give you 4 weeks to prove that you can sell. So I went and did a sales course with a fellow by the name of David Panther. And David Panther's probably been my biggest mentor for most of my life.
Who is he? Aussie guy?
David Panther used to be the drummer for the Mixtures.
Riding along Aussie on my push bike.
Riding along on my push bike. So, but this, it all gets back to music. Oh, it's crazy.
Showing our age.
Oh,
now,
I know. I know.
So what made him a specialist in sales?
Like this is, he just had this technique on how to sell.
What was it?
And it was very simple. It was 5 steps of how you meet somebody, how you find the underlying reason why they're there, and you go through. It's really, you know, I call it, and I've never stopped selling this way, it's actually customer service. It's actually asking a person really what they want without beating around the bush. It's being nice to them, breaking down those walls of the typical salesperson with the big gold chain, you know, the car salesperson image, which is what it's not. It's actually really getting to know, why did you walk in this store today? What can I help you find? And you go through that basis. There's always got to be a close.
But it's got to be more than that, John, because not everybody's cut out to be a salesman.
Correct.
So what's the extra ingredient? What else did you learn from this guy?
I suppose the steps are the steps. You can't change them. There's no special formula.
No.
It's 5 steps.
I'm interested in this because a lot of people work in that area, sales, and it's an area that I don't think I'm very – well, I haven't really done it a lot, but I struggle with it. But I did hear from someone, a very good sales manager for a car yard. He said, you sell yourself first, the company second, and the product third. Does that kind of resonate with you? Does that –
Sort of. I mean, I guess there's the first start is you never get a second chance to make a first good impression.
True.
So when somebody walks in, it's how do you greet that person? You know, do you go into that straight formal handshake? Well, no, you don't, because people, they're scared. You're getting into their zone. You know, they're all, I suppose they're almost like what they call a non-sales question. How's your day? How's the weather? You know, who are you? Where do you come from? All the things, you've got to get interested. You've got to know these people. Because if you don't know the person, how can you sell them something that's going to suit them? So once you've broken down all those barriers and they're very comfortable with you, it's no different to you having an interview with somebody. When they come in, they're a little bit tense and you make me feel comfortable. So you've got to do exactly the same thing. But then you've got to find all the underlying reasons why they want to buy that big screen TV, or why do they want to buy that Ferrari.
Can you give me an example? Let's talk about big screen TV. So what do you mean by reasons?
Okay, so they might have a 22-inch TV and they love their football. So now they want to have a big screen TV because the grand final's coming up.
Yeah.
Their wife has given them permission to get it. This time, or vice versa.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, they're the boss. I guarantee you, in retail, they're the decision maker. So you got to win them first, actually.
Yeah. No, I see what you mean. You're tapping into the reason they're in the store at the moment, looking at the big screen TV.
Correct. It's the emotional desire.
So the grand final's coming up, and I get it.
Sure. So don't even take them to a TV unless you know that.
Yeah.
When a person walks into my gym, why do they walk into my gym? What was their decision-making process? You know, the oldest saying, they go, I want to lose weight and tone up. Yeah, well, everyone says that. But why? Well, the underlying reason could have been, I have no self-esteem about myself. My husband or wife said, I don't like the way you look anymore. I'm not fitting into those clothes. I've got a wedding coming up. If you don't determine those things first, how can you sell the product?
Hmm.
You've got to have that empathy for people.
How did you go at the end of that four-week trial with brushes?
I actually became the best salesperson in the store. And then this is where the mentoring part of it came into it, because David said to me, said, you know what, John, I know you want to get into management, but you might have to change a few things about yourself. And I had the normal young attitude of, well, you know, you can cut my hair, you can take my earrings out, but it's not going to change the person that I am. I am who I am. And then David always wore a suit, and you never ever saw his arms. If he took his suit off, didn't matter how hot it was, he'd have long sleeve shirt on. So he said, I want to show you something. So he took his jacket off, rolled his sleeves up, and he had two shoulder to wrist tattoos on both of his arms, totally covered. Now, back then, the tattoo sleeve, they just weren't like they are today. Today, they've become a fashion statement. So he had full tattoos, and he said, I never show anybody those tattoos, because you've got to deal with the minority, the minority. If you can deal with the minority, then the majority are going to be happy. So then that's when I cut my ponytail off. I took one of my earrings out. And then I think that after a period of time, I ended up becoming top two in the whole of Australia as a salesperson.
Which Brash's store was this?
I had Brash's. I was in Brash's Preston.
Yeah.
Which was what they call a superstore. So they were the first big stores that had massive range. But across the road from that, there was Northland Shopping Centre, and it had what they call combined stores. So that was the music and electrical. So my goal was I wanted to go into one of those stores because I became quite knowledgeable about music, but it was more the hi-fi. I loved the hi-fi sound, and they went hand in hand for me to sell hi-fi and sell music at the same time, as in CDs. So in Brash's, I ended up becoming like a troubleshooter. So I got moved from store to store, stores that weren't making money. I'd go in there and I'd turn them around, and then I'd move to another store. So after a period of time of doing that, I got was bored. And I remember a regional manager, I was at Faulkner, was the last store. He said, what do you want to do now? And I had this thing of wanting to move to Queensland. He said, we got a store in Bundle. So I moved up to Bundle, Queensland. That's really where the music started to grow for me, because I became like a mini regional on the Gold Coast, looking after some combined stores. Long and short of it is I ended up becoming the state manager of Brash's Queensland. So I was looking after 26 stores, and a lot of them were music stores. So I lived the dream, hung out with the Rolling Stones, hung out with all those.
You just reminded me, I think when we got together a couple of years ago, Brash's sponsored the Voodoo Lounge tour. Correct. Rolling Stones. I think it was 94, 95.
That's right, yeah.
And that they had a big press conference at the MCG, which I attended, and there were 200 press people there, and then you toured the Voodoo Lounge stage.
Yeah.
So they presented that tour back then.
Well, we did the same thing up here.
Right.
And I was a divisional manager at that stage, so there was three divisional managers, one that looked after just electrical, one that looked after the combined stores, which were music and electrical, and one that had music alone.
Brash's sounds like the business model, very similar to what JB Hi-Fi do today.
Correct.
But what happened to them? Because they folded.
Yeah, Brash's went into administration. So they were 140 years old, and then they went
Australian
to administration.
Australian company?
Australian company.
Yeah.
The biggest mistake they made was, I believe, is if stores were failing and they were on long leases, or they didn't have good leases, the profitable stores, they were keeping the bad stores, and the profitable stores were basically carrying them for quite some time. The worst decision ever made is when we went into administration, a company by the name of HBL Reef Group bought it. And that company owned Jeep back then, and they also owned the Planet Hollywoods. And they tried to turn us into a white goods store, so like the Harvey Norman is today. So they broke up the stores, they put all these things in, put all these white boxes in. We were specialists in audio video, not fridges and music. That's what we specialised in. So that was one downside. And then HBL sold 51% to a company by the name of Daiichi. Daiichi were the biggest Japanese electrical retailer. So then it all became controlling, and then it just sort of pretty well folded from there, I guess. And, you know, Harvey Norman made a lot of inroad into Australia at that stage, and their stores became bigger and better than Brash's back then, so that would have hurt as well. So I decided to go. I knew the writing was on the wall, and I left Brash's and joined Harvey Norman. I had to go to Toowoomba was my first store up there, and they bought a store by the name of Burnoth Electrical.
Do you have a mentor? Is there someone that you talk to, confide in, someone that coaches you?
No, not really. No.
I imagine you would be a mentor or coach to a number of people. Do I recall correctly that you do some life coaching?
When I left retail, it's when I started determined that I could actually teach people, because I never really thought about it. Because when I was on The Biggest Loser, I started to do some shadow personal training with Shannon, the trainer, and I started to enjoy it. I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. I became a personal trainer because I got a scholarship to become a personal trainer through Australian Institute of Fitness. Then I ended up joining JETS. So I got sick of the PT. I went from one extreme to the other. So 100 hours a week in retail, went The Biggest Loser, got off, become a qualified personal trainer, and went the opposite way. So I was doing like 25 hours sitting on the beach, training people, loving it. It was so good. But what it did is it revitalized me again. So I did that for 3 years. My partner, Christine, actually said to me, she said, you know what, John, you can't just keep doing this. You've got to move forward. And I actually missed business. I love business. But when I was studying to be a trainer, I was a business coach. And I had a couple of contracts around the Sunshine Coast. So I was business coaching and studying to be a trainer. And it was pretty good income back then. So I didn't have to work that hard and work a million hours. But I just miss big business. I love big business. And then I applied for a job with JETS Fitness as a business performance manager. So I got that gig. And I was looking after 23 clubs back then. It's very similar to retail, very similar customer service orientated business. One day I had to do a presentation in the morning with the general manager, and I knew 20% of the content, and he was going to deliver the other 80%. So that morning he rings me and says, I can't come. I'm as crook as a dog. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? I've got all these managers coming. He said, well, you're going to have to deliver it. And I was so scared. I really didn't know what to do. So I went upstairs, and the outgoing national training manager for JETS, I said to him, Pete, what am I going to do with this? He said, John, you've been in business long enough. Read the content, go through it, then go down and deliver. He said, but here's the biggest key. Make it your own. So anyway, absolutely nailed it. And the long and short of it is I ended up becoming the national training manager for JETS. And that was when I actually realized I can actually teach people. And now it's become very much a passion. I love teaching. I love sharing. So I sit back and I look at myself, and I guess I have this saying that I say to a lot of young people. You know, I'm 55 years old. I'm not your mother. I'm not your father. I'm not your friend. I'm nothing. I'm just a 55-year-old bloke that's quite happy to share my information with you, and hopefully it works for you and helps you.
In a number of different fields, John, or are you talking just like physical fitness?
Any field.
Yeah, right.
Any field. See, business is business to me. I've got a club manager now that she's been with me for just over 2 years, and I teach her everything. I believe business is the same. It's the same fundamental. Doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a real estate agent, whether you own a car yard, whether you own a gym, whether you own a retail store. Business is business, same fundamental. And that's what I teach. So I'll teach people how to run a business, not how to run a gym.
And what does that come back to, though, John? Is it always about customer service?
Going to be customer service.
What is the key?
Well, there's two keys. Firstly, customer service is number one priority. You've got to make sure your customer's happy. Otherwise, they're not going to come back. But number two is, to have a great business, you've got to try and look forward. What's happening in the industry in 5 years' time? Because you can't sit there and just wait for it to happen. You've got to make it happen.
We talked about this buzzword, or a word that describes you, reinvention. Is there another reinvention after the fitness industry for you, John?
For me?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know, John. That's way too far in advance. But today I'm sort of I'm building a house. I'm renovating a club. They both started last week. So who in their right mind would do two things like that at once? My reinvention now is my daughter and son-in-law and granddaughter have just moved up to Noosa a week ago. And I just want to enjoy my family and sit back and enjoy my life for a little while. And I don't know, like, I do a little bit of acting, I do a little bit of modelling, I love public speaking, I don't know what it is, but there's just something about speaking to people and sharing information that just excites me. It's rewarding, it's very rewarding to walk off a stage and you look at faces out in that crowd and they're shaking, they're nodding their head going, yeah, you know what, I could do that. And it's like, well, just do it, you know?
Thank you so much for your time, John.
More than welcome, thank you.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that chat with John Morrell. And if you did and you think other people would benefit from having a listen to that, whether there are some tips on selling or resilience or building a new career path in retail or fitness, please share the podcast on social media channels. And if you listen to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Wooshka.com, or even Stitcher, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Until next time, remember there are two fresh podcasts up on our website every Monday and Thursday. I hope you keep coming back to check them out in noosamagazine.com.au/conversations.